From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American businesses want to end multi-million dollar legal judgments in America's courts for class action suits, spilled coffee and asbestos claims and more. American trial attorneys cry, what about corporate negligence? What about the little guy? And Republicans and Democrats are making a bloody proxy war over the battle over tort reform. Trial attorneys used to have state courts in the palm of their hand. Now big business is going into the political trenches, pouring money into elections for state judges. This year, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is raising $40 million for lobbying and political campaigns. But that's nothing compared to what's at stake, roughly $200 billion a year in the cost of litigation and liability claims. Tonight on Point, high politics, blood money, and tort reform. We begin with Forbes magazine reporter Matthew Miller. He says in his article, Buying Justice, that the battle now between big business and trial attorneys is uglier than ever. The two sides are throwing money in states like Mississippi, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Texas to get their judges on the bench. Good evening and welcome, Matthew Miller.
Hi, Tom. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks for joining us. Matthew Miller, you tell quite a story in your Forbes piece, Buying Justice, about the huge campaign that big business is mounting to get judges that they see as friendly to business onto the bench in an effort to get away from huge settlements in liability claim suits, huge jury awards. You call it a secret campaign. How's it being carried out?
Well, basically what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has done over the past 3 years is they've raised about $100 million from companies such as American International Group, Home Depot, Daimler, Chrysler. And what they've done is funneled that into a subsidiary of theirs called the Institute for Legal Reform. And what they're doing with that institute is a number of initiatives aimed at tort reform. And the prime objective of that group is to oust judges they believe to be anti-business and replace them with pro-business judges that are sympathetic to multinational corporations and the Republican Party.
Now, this from Forbes, a magazine of business. Why is big business so upset, so determined to change the profile of judges on the American bench, Matt?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at history, Tom, plaintiffs' attorneys have had state judiciaries in the palm of their hands for a long time. They've always traditionally given a lot of money to judicial campaigns and been able to then go into the courtroom 6 months later and have a case tried before that judge.
So the trial attorneys have had a cozy relationship, you would say, historically.
Historically,
with judges.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when the Chamber of Commerce saw this, their eyebrows raised, and they said, "Well, look at all this. They had whispers from a lot of CEOs and a lot of heads of major corporations saying this is costing us billions of dollars a year." AIG Chairman Hank Greenberg went to Tom Donohue along with Bernie Marcus.
Tom Donohue, the head of the Chamber of Commerce, Chamber of Commerce.
Tom Donohue is the head of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. They went to him and they said, "Look, this is costing us billions of dollars a year. If they aren't huge judgments, we're having to settle out of court, and all the judges are, in some states, are favoring plaintiff's attorneys and trial attorneys who have been traditionally funding their campaigns."
So he said, let's get in under the hood with some big money and see if we can change this?
And let's see if we can change that. And for the most part, in the past 3 years, they've been extremely successful.
Give us some measure of that success.
Now, since 2000, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, in judges that they've supported, have defeated 21 of 24 judges that they deem to be bad for business. And they've also, along the way, knocked off 11 anti-business state attorneys general.
Anti-business, by their definition. And how does the Chamber of Commerce exactly do this?
Now, this is why this is a secret war and not just a war. The Chamber of Commerce is not putting up their hand and saying, oh, look, this is terrible for corporate America. Let's go after these guys. What they're doing is they're raising money, and then they're funneling this money to what they call their strategic allies, groups like the Mississippians for Economic Progress and the Illinois Civil Justice League. And some of these strategic allies will then go out and put out negative television advertising campaigns, conduct telephone campaigns and direct mail, and try and smear what they deem to be the pro-plaintiff judge. And in doing so, they've been extremely successful in going about and putting up pro-business judges, in their opinion.
Now, is this different from the kind of politics played by trial attorneys over the years?
I would not say, no, it's no different in simply giving money to judges and then or judges' campaigns, and then they get elected. What's interesting about the chambers war is that they're doing it so secretively. They're not just admitting that corporate America should be having their fair say. And I mean, in our article, they basically say we're leveling the playing ground. But for the most part, they're doing this very secretly, very covertly, whereas trial lawyers traditionally have had to file forms saying, yes, we've given $5,000 to this campaign, whereas the chamber, given certain legal restrictions and some of their strategic allies, are able to hide this money and hide their contributions. And
but it's no secret in corporate circles, Matthew Miller. I mean, corporations are putting their hands up a mile a minute saying, we want to chip into this fund.
Right, absolutely. Well, I mean, some Daimler Chrysler won't, you know, the chamber's effort is really what they say is voter education, and so they go out and they lobby and they do a lot of things. They try and change state legislatures. They push for tort reform laws, and they don't push, you know, out in the public this huge war against the judges. And some corporations say, you know, while they say yes, this is terrible, we're paying billions of dollars a year in liability, this is awful. We had Daimler Chrysler the day we went to press on our article call us and say we support voter education. We really don't support a war on judges. So we're not really sure how corporate America really feels about this. Obviously, we know it's a major problem for corporations. It costs them billions of dollars a year in aggregate. And
In jury awards to
jury awards. Well, not just jury awards. But the problem here is that most of these cases don't get to the Supreme Court. They don't even get to a judge. What happens is they settle them. And
the threat is there. They know they might lose.
Dollars instead
right.
of billions of
right.
dollars.
Right. So, let me ask you, if you would, Matt Miller, to describe a couple of the type of judges that the Chamber of U.S. Chamber of Commerce has gone after. You've got some fairly colorful characters in here. C.P. McCray of
sure.
Mississippi. Give us a sense of the man.
Judge McCray is a very interesting character. He rides a motorcycle to the courthouse. He dresses in blue jeans and wears a leather jacket. Justice McCray is a typical judge who is adored by trial lawyers. He consistently made decisions in their favor. He was the head of the Mississippi Trial Lawyers Association.
Mm-hmm.
And almost $700,000 that he raised for his 2000 campaign came in the form of contributions from trial lawyers.
Okay.
Now, this gentleman, according to chamber research, decided in favor of plaintiffs 92% of the time. So when the chamber got a hold of this guy, it was an easy situation.
But he was proud of it. McCray said
absolutely.
He's proud of defending the have-nots against the haves.
Yeah, which is certainly a surprising thing, given that judges are supposed to be impartial. So there's no doubt about it that Justice McCray is proud of his stay on the court and his track record.
What happened when the Chamber of Commerce lined up? What happened when they lined up against him at the Chamber of Commerce?
Well, they did a real good job of smearing him. They pumped in about $1 million in anti-McCray ads, mostly through strategic allies. And at the end of the election, he lost in a landslide to a gentleman named Jess Dickinson, who, through our reporting, suggests was much more interested in pro-business movements than anti-business movements.
But these stories are revealing. There's another judge in West Virginia, Warren McGraw.
Justice McGraw, yes.
Now, he's got a ruling under his belt that one can imagine why it's made him a business target. Can you describe that no proof, no problem ruling?
Sure. The no proof, no problem cases, the legal term in the press is it's known as medical monitoring cases. And what these cases are they allow plaintiffs or employees of a company to sue their employer simply because they have a fear that they're going to be injured sometime in the future because they've been exposed to a toxic substance, for example. And what they say is that they need money for expensive medical testing way out in the future. Now, medical monitoring cases traditionally are settled for large lump sums of cash as opposed to the company paying them periodic sums of money as they want to get tested. And as a result, many, many people are bringing cases. It's growing at an exponential rate where employees are simply suing their companies just based on, hey, I can get a quick lump sum of money here and just say I'm going after a medical test, and then they'll go out and buy a truck.
Mm. There's also a legislative arm to this effort. In Congress, there's a business support for legislation that would close doors to liability claims.
Yeah, absolutely. Our article focused mostly on judges, but the chamber is quick to point out that a lot of their money goes towards lobbying and legislative efforts, both at the federal and state levels, of trying to fix what they believe is a problem in terms of the you know, the sheer amount of damages that a corporation can be held liable for.
Matthew, in Forbes, the self-proclaimed capitalist tool, we read this headline, Buying Justice. Do you really think that American justice is for sale here around this issue of tort reform and judges' roles?
Absolutely. But there are two sides to this. There are two major powers being played here that are really, in effect, trying to buy justice. On one side, we have big business supported by the Chamber of Commerce, and on the other side, we have trial lawyers. And what we're seeing is an escalation in the sheer amount of money that is being spent in state Supreme Court elections. We quoted a number in our article, you know, that says that the amount of money that has been spent between 1998's judicial elections and 2000 judicial elections went up 68%. I mean, these are numbers that are showing that the amount of money that is going into judicial elections is escalating. And for the most part, two sides are really vying to buy justice. And so absolutely, justice is for sale. And it's a shame because it's the one branch of government where we really need impartiality. And shame on big business and the trial lawyers for trying to influence what really should be an impartial part of democracy.
Matthew Miller, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
Matthew Miller is a reporter at Forbes magazine. He spoke with us from New York. We're talking this hour about the behind-the-scenes battle over liability claims in the U.S. legal system. Is the threat of mega lawsuits necessary to keep corporate America in line? Have big-dollar awards to injured individuals gotten out of hand? How do we strike the right balance between justice for the injured and common sense for the country and the economy? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is Larry Finneran. He joins us from Washington. He's Vice President of Regulation and Competition at the National Association of Manufacturers, a major supporter of judges and legislation that would rein in mega million-dollar liability claim jury awards and settlements. Good evening and welcome, Larry Finneran.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, thanks, and thanks for joining us. Also joining us from San Francisco tonight is Leo Boyle, former president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America and a partner in the Boston law firm Meehan, Boyle, Black & Fitzgerald. Good evening and welcome, Leo Boyle.
Thank you very much for having me on, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. Larry Finneran, first to you. We can feel all the heat in the business corner, all the desire to see the liability claim world narrowed. Why so much focus on this right now?
Well, first let me, just so people understand, I am with the National Association of Manufacturers. I'm not with the Chamber of Commerce or the Institute for Legal Reform. So, you know, while
I'm But you're familiar with their work, and no doubt there are members of your association that support their work.
I'm sorry?
No doubt there are members of your association that support that.
No, actually they are not. The Chamber and the NAM are actually, you know, association, not rivals, that's the wrong word, but we are totally different different associations.
All right, so the distinction drawn, but I understand that tort reform is high on your agenda,
right,
too.
And,
why?
And we obviously are supporting a lot of what the Chamber and the NAM work together on, a lot of these issues that we have in common, such as legal reform. So, and I would say with the judges and contributions and the amount of money that the business community has begun to contribute, you know, for the longest time, the business community did not contribute to judicial elections and would be quite content to keep them nonpartisan and above the political fray. But what started happening over the last, 20 years or so, increasingly, they found in certain jurisdictions that, you know, there was no fairness to the trials at all, and that the judges literally were elected through the contributions of the trial lawyers and in their local trial bar, and you would get to their courtrooms and there really was no real sense of fairness or justice, and so that's what the reaction it stems from, is basically as the spokesman for the chamber said in the article, to level the playing field.
A lot of money going out and a lot of dissatisfaction in the business world. Leo Boyle, stand by. We're going to come back and get your perspective on this, too. We're talking tonight about the battle between trial lawyers and big business over what you can sue for in America and the huge money stakes behind the debate in Washington. We're at 1-800-423-8255. You can join the conversation. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the battle between trial lawyers and big business over what you can sue for in America and the huge money stakes politically behind the debate in Washington. My guests tonight, Larry Finneran, Vice President of Regulation and Competition for the National Association of Manufacturers, joining us from Washington. And from San Francisco tonight, Leo Boyle, former president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America. You can join the conversation, too. Does the threat of mega lawsuits keep corporate America in line? Or have mega million, mega billion dollar jury awards and settlements for pain and suffering and all the rest just gotten out of hand? And if big money can knock judges off the bench or put friendly judges in, is American justice bought and paid for? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Leo Boyle, let me turn to you. You know there's a big campaign on to shut down the business that you've spent a lot of your career in. Is this a cancer on the American economy?
Tom, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. And let me just start my comments with a thought that I shared last time I was fortunate enough to be with you, and that is this. Where you come out on this discussion and debate ultimately depends upon who you want to protect from the legal system. Now, if you go into the debate bound and determined to protect Enron, WorldCom, Firestone, the tobacco companies, then you come out in one place, and then you are comfortable with what the Chamber of Commerce is doing. By the way, if Matt Miller's still on, I found the article very helpful at uncovering this extraordinary secret campaign to by corporate America to hostily take over the justice system.
But bear in mind, Leo Boyle, that Matt Miller points out in the article, and he's gone now, but points out that he says that the trial attorneys have been the ones essentially putting out the money that put judges on the benches for many years, and he, like others, points to the enormous scale of many of these settlements and jury awards and raises at least the business perspective that this is economically damaging. As the head of the America, as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says, the trial lawyers are bending the system until it's breaking.
Well, if that were true, it would be worrisome, but it's not true. Now, the piece I didn't get to is this. If you think the civil justice system is supposed to protect everybody, not just corporations, not just the Enrons of the world, but the ordinary citizens who are injured by the negligence of others, then you come out in a different place. Let me just read these words from the chamber's president. Quote, now the money is rolling in from drug companies, heavy manufacturers, large retailers, insurance companies, even banks. Now, it's also rolling in from tobacco companies. He didn't mention that.
This is from Tom Donahue.
Tom Donahue, the head of the chamber. Now, if that's who you want to be the parent corporations of your justice system, that's the kind of justice you want, then that's fine. The problem, the people who are forgotten in the debate and who haven't been mentioned yet, either by Larry or not much by Matt, are the people, the victims, the people who are affected by this. We as trial lawyers are intermediaries. We are representatives, and we represent the people who are hurt. And all of these so-called reforms are designed to do one thing. They're designed to make corporations more powerful and more immune, and they're designed to make people more vulnerable and have less rights. And if that's the kind of America you want, then this stuff makes sense.
Larry Finneran, let me ask you about that. Stand by, Leo Boyle. Larry Finneran, is this a battle between corporate interests and citizen interests?
Well, I'd say, first of all, you know, in terms of who's affected, you know, it's easy to talk about some of the corporations that have been in the news and to talk about an amorphous, faceless corporation, but there are workers at those corporations, and just in asbestos litigation alone, the bankruptcies of including companies that never made asbestos but were driven into bankruptcies, the bankruptcies have caused there's been 67 so far, by the way. You know, it's caused the direct job loss of 60,000 jobs. People's 401ks have been devastated at these companies and may never recover. There's a guy who retired as a millionaire with his 401k and ended up having to work at Walmart as a greeter.
Because of the bankruptcy of a country that faced with an asbestos suit.
Right. You know, he unfortunately had everything in the company stock, and this was before WorldCom, Enron. But and in terms of who all is hurt, in addition to those workers, you have eight to ten other jobs are lost in the local economy for every manufacturing job. And also, there's a woman who I'm sure Mr. Boyle is familiar with in Jefferson County, Mississippi, where the judges were very, very plaintiff friendly, and almost all the pharmaceutical cases were brought in that county, because when they did go to trial, the juries were very generous, so nobody would ever take case for a jury. And this woman, Hilda Bankston, in order to defeat the federal rules that would put these cases in more objective federal courts where the judges are lifetime tenured, they had to bring into the case somebody local. So they brought in this woman, Hilda Bankston, who testified before Congress. She owned the only pharmacy in the county. She was driven out of business from all the lawsuits. Her husband had a heart attack. And so, there are other real people as well.
We've got it, Larry Finn. And Leo Boyle, let me put it to you. Both sides can bring up individuals. We're hearing that tonight. What about just the cost of this litigation and liability claims? We read in Matt Miller's story in Forbes that in 1950 it was 0.6% of the American GDP spent on that. In 2001, it's a full 2% of the gross domestic product. That's a lot of money, $200 billion a year, headed toward $300 billion a year. Is there such a thing as too much in the settlements?
And I would point out that you've doubled the average amount of other industrialized countries. I'm sorry, Mr. Boyle, I'll let you talk.
Okay, shall I go now?
Please,
okay.
Leo Boyle, please.
All right, let me back up just one second and point out the most fundamental proposition of business, and Larry knows this and Matt knows this. When the stock market goes down and NASDAQ goes down, insurance company revenues go down and premiums go up.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance companies get their money from two places. They charge you and me premiums, and they invest the money they charge us. Now, it's an immutable proposition that when NASDAQ loses 70% of its value and when the stock market loses 30% of its value, insurance companies lose money, and they can only go one place to get it back, and they raise premiums. Now, historically, what they do is blame the victims. They blame patients in medical malpractice. And I'll give you an example. In Massachusetts, our main medical malpractice insurer advertises to get more business, and in its ad, it says, this is ProMutual, it says, of the cases that go to trial, 94% of the verdicts come back in favor of the insurance company. 6% come back for the patient. So the fundamental falsehood in all of this is that juries are irresponsible, that there are runaway verdicts. There simply is zero data to report that. What's happening is an age-old insurance premium cycle. And when insurance companies lose money, they blame the victims. Now they want to wage in and take away the victims' rights. Now, by what right do we have to say to a brain-damaged child from an obstetrical malpractice case that a fair amount of damages for you for life is $250,000 when we know that isn't going to change the insurance premium structure?
Mm. Leo Boyle, Larry Finner, and standby. I want to welcome into our conversation Peter Stone. He's a correspondent at the National Journal. He is joining us from Silver Spring, Maryland tonight. Good evening and welcome, Peter Stone.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Great to have you on. Peter Stone, we've heard tonight from Matt Miller at Forbes, who's recently written, as you have, at the National Journal, about this battle royal over tort reform and the interests running through it. We've got Leo Boyle and Larry Finneran on, bringing their opposing perspectives on whether or not this is a system out of control or corporations running amok. You've written in the National Journal very recently about the political envelope, the political context for this huge fight. Give us a sense of that, just how deeply the Republicans and Democrats are invested and how they're invested in this battle.
Well, both parties have, on one level, donor bases that are very heavily committed to opposing points of view. The Democrats have gotten enormous funding in recent years, particularly in soft money, from the trial lawyer community. And this has been much to the chagrin of the Republican Party. At the same time, Republican donor bases, including insurers and some manufacturers and other business interests, have long wanted to rein in the trial lawyers and put through some kind of tort reform legislation, and have been frustrated in recent years, particularly in Washington, in doing so. With the Bush administration coming in, having a track record of supporting President Bush when he was governor of Texas, having a strong track record on this issue, both houses now being in Republican control, many in the business community have seen this as sort of a opportune time and a perhaps the best opportunity in many years to mount a large offensive, both financially and from a lobbying point of view, for various kinds of tort reform bills.
You quote somebody in Washington calling this a win-win for Republicans. What do they mean by that?
Well, that was a campaign finance analyst who follows the influence of money in politics, and he was referring to it's a twofer in effect, that by supporting tort reform in various areas, the Bush administration and its allies in the business community can achieve legislative and policy goals. At the same time, there's a hope that this would dry up some of the trial lawyer money, which has been used heavily, you know, overwhelmingly 85-90% in recent cycles, to fund Democrats. And they're one of the leading sources of Democratic funding. They're up there in the top three or four in the donor community.
And you write about how in late March, a bunch of lawyers and Fortune 500 representatives sat down with Karl Rove to talk about exactly that.
Right. Well, they were in there to talk specifically about the class action reform, which is pending now in passed the House, and a similar bill is pending in the Senate.
Can you give us a nutshell of that and the other two initiatives in Congress now?
Well, the bill that passed the House would, in effect, make it much easier for many class action suits to be put in federal court. Right now, they're primarily in state courts, heavily in state courts. And the business community has argued for a long time, and with some justice, that there's a lot of venue shopping that goes on.
In other words, they take the trial to a court where they think they'll get the most favorable verdict.
That's happened quite a bit. And at the same time, they've suffered some big losses in state courts. I mean, there was a decision not too long ago in, that hit Philip Morris, now known as Altria, very hard. There have been a number of other decisions in recent years that have really made quite an impact on different segments of the business community, be they chemical companies, pharmaceutical companies, energy companies. And they've long wanted to federalize more of these suits. So the bill a bill passed the House with more Democratic votes than it had ever had before, and a similar bill is pending in the Senate. The supporters of the bill say they've now got 57, 58 votes, including several Democrats, obviously, and they're trying to get to 60 because in order for it to get through, they're going to have to block a filibuster.
And then there's legislation on the asbestos claims front and legislation that would simply put a cap on certain kinds of claims.
Well, there's legislation on the medical malpractice front that would put a cap on claims. A bill like this has once again passed the House this year. In the Senate, they tried to vote a couple weeks ago. It got less than 50 votes, and but they're promised another vote in October. The Republican leadership has said it will come back again in October, and they're hoping to mount a strong offensive during the August recess and in the fall through advertising, through grassroots efforts to try to win over some moderate Democrats. And the moderate Democrats are under a lot of pressure on this in the Senate because many of them are a little more pro-business and less union-oriented than the majority of Democrats. And they feel that, there may be time for some tort reform, some kind of adjustment. But they also feel that some of the adjustments that the business community is pushing go too far.
But the battle is fully joined, and Republicans have a lot of sway right now. Peter Stone, Leo Boyle, Larry Finner, and stand by. We've got callers who want to join us, and I want to invite them in. Ted's on the line. Hi, Ted. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Great, thanks.
I'm a insulation contractor. We installed I've been doing it since 1956.
Okay.
Insulations that contained asbestos were small contractors. Our volumes would run from maybe $3 million a year to $10 million a year.
Okay, in dollars of business, right.
In $1 million of business. Because all when we were installing it, the manufacturers all lied to us. We knew nothing about the problems with asbestos, and any more than our workmen did. And we're union contractors. And now, because all the manufacturers have gone out of business, the trial attorneys have turned to chasing the small contractors.
Like
this
you.
This is not all dealing with big business.
Mm-hmm. So have suits been brought against your company, Ted?
Absolutely. And I now spend close to 80% of my time doing nothing but dealing with asbestos suits that were brought against us by people who can't say that they were on a site where my people were working. They say that I had a duty to notify them of the problems when I didn't even know about the problems myself.
So what's your attitude toward trial lawyers and this kind of lawsuit?
Well, I think that my attitude toward trial lawyers is that, quite frankly, they're taking the money that you're more – if there are people who are truly injured, there are many more friends of mine. One was my stepfather. And the trial lawyers are taking a huge percentage of the money that is supposedly awarded to the plaintiffs. And, you know, they're now multimillionaires. There, some of them are being close to – being billionaires.
And that's not where you'd like to see the money go. Ted, I want to have time before the break to put that to Leo Boyle, but thank you for your call. Leo Boyle, what do you make of Ted's story?
Well, the salient things I heard in that sound actually very tragic. The fact that it sounds like your stepfather, Ted, has been affected by this, you were lied to by the asbestos companies. And what the current debate is about is to give immunities to companies that lie and injure and kill people like Ted's stepfather.
But Leo Boyle, he's also under the gun from trial lawyers himself right now. Sounds like he'd like a bit of immunity.
Well, the juries don't make many mistakes. Juries are quite trustworthy. If indeed Ted didn't know anything about the dangerous nature of the of the product, and I believe him. He said he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
A jury will hear that. If an injured person wasn't even working on Ted's work site, that person will not recover. The jury system is not irrational. It's made up of you and me and our neighbors, and they respond to reasonable arguments. And if, as Ted said, they hear that a company lied and intentionally killed someone, they do indeed render verdicts that are appropriate to that conduct.
Boy, it's a tough picture. Right now, Ted feels like he's over a barrel. Leo Boyle, stand by. Larry Finneran, Peter Stone. We're talking tonight about the battle between trial lawyers and big business over what you can sue for in America. Has the Democratic Party become too dependent on trial lawyer sugar daddies? Are Republicans trying to lock in corporate power and their own by kicking away the threat of the big lawsuit? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the battle between trial lawyers and big business over what you can sue for in America and the huge money stakes behind the debate in Washington. My guests tonight are Peter Stone, staff correspondent for the National Journal, author of the Trial Lawyers on Trial piece in the July 12th issue of the National Journal. From San Francisco, Leo Boyle, former president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America. And from Washington, Larry Finneran, vice president of the National Association of Manufacturers. You can join us as well if big money can knock judges off the bench or put friendly judges on. Is American justice bought and paid for? Was it already bought and paid for? And I guess more fundamentally, what's at stake here in terms of the kind of country America is going to be, about where power will lie in the USA? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Sandra's on the line. Hi, Sandra. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for doing this show tonight.
Sure.
I think it's something that really people need to think more about these days. I think that we need to have these checks in place to keep big business in line. I mean, corporate America has shown that it will pay claims, even if it's for lives, if it's deemed, you know, cheaper for them in the long run. And I think the crux of the issue here, I totally agree with Mr. Boyle, and who are we looking to protect? Yeah, there may be some excessive judgments or some bogus suits, but if one or two of those have to sneak in to ensure that the 98% and 99% of legitimate cases, you know, reach the courts, then I think that that's a price that we have to pay. And sure, product liability costs us all as consumers money. I realize that. But I don't think that if this were to be gone, that those savings would get passed along to the consumer.
So you're willing to go with the system, even if it has some excesses in it, to keep the balance of power where it's been?
Sure. I think that, you know, we need to do that to protect ourselves as Americans. And I think that the bigger issue here, what's really troubling me, is the bigger question. How is it that these campaigns, you know, to get rid of those judges,
mm-hmm.
how is it that they are becoming successful? Why is the mood in America changing? I'm just really afraid. I think America is becoming a very angry place, and Americans are becoming very angry. My neighbor shouldn't be allowed to file for bankruptcy. That's not a legitimate lawsuit. He shouldn't be on workers' comp. I'm just afraid that things are changing at a slow pace, but they're changing, and America will become a place that we really don't recognize any longer. And are people ready for that? Do people realize that, you know, that's what they're agreeing to?
Sandra, we've got the perspective, and we thank you for it. Peter Stone, I know we don't have you forever tonight. Let me put it to you. You describe what's going on here as a kind of holy war. In the largest terms, what's the framework of that holy war?
Well, I think it's a polarization on both sides has taken place. I mean, I think on both sides there have been a hardening of positions, and I think the point is that we may need some reforms, but that, as I quoted a professor from the University of Virginia is saying, who's an expert on no-fault auto insurance, he said business wants reforms that only advantage them. All their reforms are pro-defendant. The trial lawyers see the system as wonderful, and we ought to expand it. There's certainly a little exaggeration in that statement, but I think he's on to something which, you know, is really underlying some of the fights that are underway.
And what about at the
that
political?
Exaggeration, really, on both sides, and not a lot of willingness to try and reach a middle ground on some of these issues.
And what about at the political level, Peter? If, as you as you've reported it described, if this is a win-win for the Republicans and corporate allies, if they win on the tort reform front, is that game, set, match? Does that cut off the Democrats' flow of dollars and basically put the GOP and big business in the driver's seat?
I don't think it does, and I don't think it's going to happen either that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's a lever for Republicans to increase their power. I don't think we're going to see all three of these bills get through. I think if they're lucky, one of these bills will get through this year. I think the class action one has the best chances. I think the trial lawyers are fighting back with enormous resources, too. And, you know, I think it would certainly put a crimp, it could put a crimp in the Democratic money base, but I don't think it's, I think it's far from game, set, match. And I think before it's over, both sides are going to have to give a little more than they currently are in this debate.
Peter Stone, we've got it. We thank you for your perspective tonight. Thanks so much for joining.
Much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Peter Stone is staff correspondent for the National Journal. Nick is joining us from Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks, Tom. Tom, I'm a small business owner. In the last 2 years, I've been trying to get liability insurance for my company, which is virtually impossible because I'm in the medical field.
Okay.
And what Leo's talking about, that he really cares about the people, I do not believe for 1 second. If the trial lawyers had a cap on what they were able to take off these big multi-million and billion-dollar lawsuits, trust me, they wouldn't be bringing so many against the insurance companies and against the tobacco firms, against all the manufacturing companies. If they were capped and got a minimal amount, I guarantee you there would not be that many lawsuits.
If they didn't get that one-third or 30-something percent. But, Nick, do you think it was wrong to bring a big suit against tobacco after all their years of profiting off Americans' poor health?
You know what? I'm a non-smoker, but yep. I could read the pack of that cigarettes that says you may get cancer. My grandfather died of cancer. My brother smokes. I've asked him not to smoke. Why he started to smoke, probably thought it was cool. But I'm not to judge other people. If they want to do it, let them do it. day are burdening the healthcare system, but by you awarding $2 million to a family, I don't see where that's going to help that family out. That's just going to let them cash out. They don't have to work. And then the trial lawyers get a huge sum of money from lawsuits like that. I don't think it's helping.
They make billions. There's no doubt about it. Nick, our time is running down, but we appreciate your call. Leo Boyle, what about it? Nick says, you guys, trial lawyers are making out like bandits, and it doesn't end up really solving the country's problems.
Well, what I gleaned from that was the first part of his statement, and that is that he's in a medical-related company. And he
can't get liability insurance.
Yeah, he's trouble getting liability insurance. And all of the other mean-spirited limitations on the rights of patients and ordinary citizens wouldn't do anything to help Nick. What he is a victim of is predatory insurance practices, over-aggressive underwriting, poor investment practices that all came home to roost in 2001 when NASDAQ and the stock market came close to crashing. And so what ought to be looked at is how insurance is priced. The insurance industry and Major League Baseball are the only two businesses with antitrust exemptions. Now, why is that? Why should we have insurance companies that have antitrust exemptions? They can't be sued for antitrust. That would help Nick. Capping damages isn't going to help Nick.
Larry Finneran, let me put to you, our time is running down here, but I wonder how much success in the push for tort reform are you anticipating at the National Association of Manufacturers? Do you feel you've got the momentum going here?
Well, I do, and I just want to respond to that point that Leo made twice about insurance.
Yes.
And I don't work the medical liability reform bill, but I'm fairly close to it. But if that were true, if what he was saying were true, and that was the only cause, I mean, you have the crisis, the doctor's crisis, in Mississippi and West Virginia and all of these states that are notorious for their problems with their courts. Now, Leo lives in California.
I'm sorry.
But in California, you know, where they did enact reforms, where they did enact a bill that's almost identical to what's before the Senate now, and I think Peter misspoke. I was going to try to mention to him there are no caps in that bill. There are limits, but not caps.
Mm-hmm.
But that when California reformed their a system of medical liability 25 years ago, it's worked well. And you haven't seen a doctor crisis in California. So it's not only the greed.
Our time's almost out, Larry Finneran. Do you smell some big victories in the offing here?
I do, and I would say because people are realizing that there is a problem with the system. It's broke. Class actions should be in federal court. They're nationwide, and they're large, and a county judge shouldn't set national policy.
There's the sound of manufacturers feeling hopeful. Larry Finneran, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Okay.
Larry Finneran is vice president of the National Association of Manufacturers, and Leo Boyle in San Francisco tonight, but Boston-based. Thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, it's great to be back on the show, and thanks for hearing us out.
Leo Boyle is former president of the Association of Trial Lawyers of America. He's a partner in the law firm of Meehan Boyle, Black & Fitzgerald in Boston. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onepointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, Paul Bremer presents a plan to restore order in Iraq. This is On Point. Ambassador Paul Bremer, the Pentagon's top civilian authority in occupied Iraq, is in Washington this week to brief members of Congress and the White House on security and reconstruction efforts in Iraq, buoyed by the deaths of the sons of Saddam Hussein, Qusay and Uday Hussein, in Iraq yesterday. Bremer today made public 60 and 120-day plans to restore order, security, and civil society to that country. As critics continue to point to the rising death toll among U.S. troops and poor planning for the post-war period, Bremer highlighted progress made to date and proposed benchmarks for the next few months. Here are excerpts from his speech to the National Press Club earlier today.
Today we have three challenges in Iraq: securing the country, setting the economy on a path to prosperity, and building the foundations of a sovereign democratic government. To date, we have implemented several thousand such projects all across Iraq. Additional steps that will be taken over the next 60 days to improve security include, first, recruiting and training the 1st Battalion of the new Iraqi Army. Secondly, we will raise 8 battalions of the new Iraqi Civil Defense Corps in the next 60 days. We will open the new police academy, which is now, even now, recruiting for police. We will reestablish the border guard. We will start trials before the Central Criminal Court, which I established a month ago, and we will start judge training seminars. The second element of our strategy is working with the Iraqis to put their country on the right economic path. Much work remains to be done, including the restoration of basic services, without which no economic plan can succeed. One of the first obstacles the coalition encountered in restoring basic services was a dilapidated infrastructure. Our engineers estimate that it will take as much as $13 billion to rebuild and meet foreseeable power demands. The United Nations estimates that we will have to spend $16 billion over the next 4 years just on water and getting decent water to the population. These numbers are indicative of the kinds of money that is going to have to be spent just to get Iraq to normal standards in its economy. Another example is health care. In the 1990s, Saddam Hussein cut health care by 90%. The budget that I just approved 3 weeks ago will increase that to $211 million in this 6 months alone, an increase in health care spending of 3,500% over what Saddam spent last year. We are injecting almost $200 million a month into the economy through the payment of salaries, pensions, and emergencies payments. But with our development projects, we will also provide thousands, tens of thousands of jobs in the next 60 days ahead. The longer-term component of our economic program is crafting policies that will lead to long-term growth. During the past month and over the next 60 days, many policies for growth have been or will be established. Finally, we have a strategy for dealing with political development. When I arrived in Iraq in May, I said that by mid-July we would meet our first critical milestone, the formation of a broadly representative interim council with real powers and responsibilities. Well, last week on July 13th, which is pretty much the middle of July, we executed according to plan with the formation of the Iraqi Governing Council. It represents the diversity of Iraq, whether they are Shia or Sunni, Arab or Kurd, Baghdadi or Basrawi, man or woman. All Iraqis will see themselves represented in this council. The president's vision for Iraq is to build a sovereign, free, unified, and democratic Iraq at peace with its neighbors and with the world. We have made a lot of progress moving towards that vision, and we have a plan for the next 60, 120 days and beyond that makes further progress towards those goals. In all our primary areas, security, economy, governance, we will continue to work closely with the Iraqi people. As President Bush said this morning in the White House Rose Garden, they are our greatest ally, the Iraqi people. Their dignity, their work ethic, and national pride, combined with President Bush's vision for Iraq, has convinced me that the Iraqi people's best days are yet truly to come.
Ambassador Paul Bremer speaking today at the National Press Club. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Chris O'Connor, Virginia Prescott, John Roberts, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skoke, with help from Julie Jupp. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Support.